This weekend is a time of transition for tens of thousands of families with young adult children. Seeing them off to college and university is a milestone that raises mixed emotions like anxiety, sadness, and excitement for both parent and child. I talked to psychologist Sarah Dimmerman on how to navigate the upheaval.
I wrote a book when my daughter was away at university called Don't Leave, Please Go. And I think that just kind of sums it up. On one hand, you're looking forward to maybe your last child being out of the house or having one less child at home, and you're looking forward to them starting a new chapter of their lives, and you're excited for their future. But on the other hand, you're kind of saying, you know, don't go, don't leave, because we're going to miss you, and how are you going to manage on your own? How are you going to get up for class in the morning? And, you know, how are you going to deal with your anxiety? How am I going to deal with my anxiety having you so far away? So the whole host of different emotions, and it's okay to feel all those emotions at once.
What is the first one that people might experience?
I would say anxiety. Anxiety and fear. That would be the most prevalent, I would say, at this time.
And why?
Because for many parents, maybe it's the first time that their child is leaving to go away from home, and they may feel that their child is not quite ready. They may feel guilty because they haven't gotten their children as ready as they could have. So they're just worried about how it'll be, whether they'll be able to know where they are, having them so far out of reach, whether they'll be able to cope on their own. For all those reasons, they're feeling anxious about the move.
Now, I remember way back when I went to university, my parents didn't take me there. I went to university here in Canada. I went to university overseas. Parents lately seem much more involved and helping the kids get settled.
I mean, I've been in practice for 35 years, and I've seen pretty much across the board, I think it really depends on the family. You know, some parents are a little bit more hands off, especially if you're traveling so far. But I do know other parents who have gone to England or gone to Paris or gone to places abroad to help get their kids ready. So I think it's really dependent on the family and also on the young adult in terms of what they're wanting. They may say, I got this and I want to do this on my own, or I'm going with a friend and, you know, don't bother to spend the extra money. I'll be able to, you know, video call you. I'll let you know that I'm safe and everything like that. So I don't know if it's really a sign of the times more than really dependent on the family itself.
And what do you tell parents in terms of expectations for the kids being in touch once they're set up?
You know, I think that's really dependent on the relationship and the child. So if you have a child who tends to speak to you a lot, like if they're living at home but they keep in touch with you regularly, let you know where they are, who they're with, then they'll probably continue to do that. If they've been a little bit more independent, want a little bit more distance, then they may be the same at university. And some kids who may feel that their parents have been too imposing while they've been living at home may really pull back as a way of asserting their independence. So I think it's a nice thing for parents and teens or young adults to have a conversation, perhaps, if parents are finding that their teens are not staying in touch. You know, as you said, expectations need to be realistic because they're going to be very busy, especially the first week or so, getting used to things and going to orientation meetings and such. But if you find that it's been a few weeks and you haven't heard from your child, it's okay to have the conversation and say, like, I don't want to impose. I know you're busy. I know that I hope you're having fun, but maybe we could talk every Sunday at 5 o'clock, or if we can't do it, we can rearrange the time. But set something up so that it works for both sides.
And how do parents feel if they don't hear from the kids? What does that do to their level of anxiety?
If they're used to having more connection, then that might make them feel more anxious in terms of, you know, not knowing who they're with and where they are. Because at home, you at least, many parents know who the peers are that they're hanging out with. They may know the parents. You know, if you haven't heard from your child, you may be able to call a parent to say, have you heard from your child, so to speak. But if they're living in a new city that you're unfamiliar with, if they're hanging out with new people, then you feel really out of the loop, and that can create a whole lot of anxiety for parents in general. So again, discussing that with your young adult child and figuring out something that works for both of you. As you said, though, kind of maintaining realistic expectations. Now, I remember when my daughter went away to university, you know, she was calling me more than usual because it's nice to feel needed. But, you know, how do I use the washing machine? And what do I do when I have a stain on my shirt? And all those kind of things that as many parents will do for their children. But then when they're away, they feel like, how do I do this? And I think it's all part of the learning process. Be available to them so that they can learn while you're there or while you're on the other side of the phone.
So what are the kids likely to experience? They might need help with day-to-day things, but do they feel like their parents are hovering?
Really, I think a lot of teenagers go away to university thinking that they're, you know, so happy to move away from home. But when they're there, it can be quite a daunting experience. And hopefully the lines of communication are wide enough that they can, you know, continue to be in touch with their parents and let them know, get advice from them, but also to tell them how they're feeling, because anxiety, loneliness, fear, all those things are very normal, especially when young adults go away to university or college for the first time.
How would a parent know the truth, the reality of how their kids are doing? Sometimes I would imagine that a young person would say, oh, everything's okay, when everything really is not okay.
By the time your child is going off to university or college, you probably have a pretty good read on them, that even when they're saying everything's okay, it's the inflection in their tone, it's the look on their face, it's certain body messages that they're giving off, where a parent might feel that something is not quite right, and even when they probe, they may hear, no, everything's fine, don't worry. But that may be the time, if parents are really concerned, if they're picking up on something that they're uncomfortable with, they might say, you know what, I was actually going to take a road trip in the next couple of weeks. I'm going to come and visit. And, you know, of course, you stay in a separate environment in a hotel or Airbnb or whatever, and you spend some time with your teen once they've had a chance to settle in a bit, like a month into it or 6 weeks into it. Let them show you around the residence. Let them have a sense of, have they met anybody, what's going on for them. And I think just spending some time with them other than, you know, phone calls or video calls might be more telling. So I would say if you're feeling something's not quite right, then take a trip if you can, if it's not abroad, to find out what's going on. Or suggest to your teen that it's sometimes helpful to speak to a guidance counselor either outside of school, or even universities have counseling centers that they can go to as well.
Is there a special role for grandparents in this transition?
There are many grandparents who take like a very, almost like second set of parents, and are very involved. And I think, you know, this weekend before the kids actually head off, like many are leaving on Saturday, Sunday, Monday, but, you know, this would be the time where people are having maybe little farewell parties where grandparents and other family members can come and say goodbye, some kind of closure. And, you know, maybe some grandparents may even be going up on the day of moving in. Grandparents could keep in touch, you know, depending again how much they were in touch with their grandchildren while they were in the city. But to maintain that connection, again, video or phone calls. So absolutely doesn't mean that the relationship will fall by the wayside.
Okay. Sarah Dimmerman, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was psychologist Sarah Dimmerman. I'm Libby Znaimer, and this is the Zoomer Week in Review. Coming up, we've talked about the challenges of sending them off, but what happens if those adult children move back home after their education is over?
You're listening to the Zoomer Week in Review, brought to you by CARP, fighting for financial security for our seniors. Find out more at carp.ca.
It's a trend that can be attributed to the broader economy. But when adult children move back with their parents, it can feel like a big step backwards and a big burden for both sides. Psychologist Dr. Oren Amate told me a big part of his practice is dealing with that family strife. What are the biggest issues when kids who are supposedly adults find themselves in a position where they're moving back home?
Well, this is the problem. They are in that transitional stage between quasi-adult and real adult, and they want all the rights and respect that come with being an adult, but they're not necessarily either willing or capable of, of, let's say, doing what would get them that respect that they want. They're not meeting expectations of the other person. And, it's a weird, they're in a weird kind of limbo because, again, they feel like an adult. They thought, hey, I lived alone and, I was, living by myself or with a bunch of roommates. And they think, so I deserve to be, seen as an adult, an equal player and everything. But they're not acting that way in the home. And I always tell people, I say, look, it's all about being a good citizen within the home. That's what you're trying to do.
So what are the kinds of things where they are falling short and the kinds of things that where their parents aren't respecting them?
The biggest one is about, let's say, whether the family's having dinner or if they're going out late or, it's kind of around that. They want the liberty of being able to go, come and go whenever they want. And the parents, whether it's for their peace of mind or whether it's for planning, because they want to know how many people are going to be home for dinner, they expect the person to tell them, hey, I'm going to be home at this time or I'm not having dinner or something like that. And the young adult feels, wait a second, this is such an intrusion. I should be able to do what I want without being accountable to you.
That sounds like a fairly small thing. Am I wrong?
In theory, it's small, but it hits people pretty hard because they feel, wait a second, this is my home. Like, why am I acting like a laundry service or an ATM or the free lodging and everything like that? So a lot of the parents really do feel that it's disrespectful, and that's what I try to explain. I say, look, it may seem small, but whether it's that, whether it's putting things away, whether it's expecting parents to do their laundry or any of the other household chores, I say, really, this is why I said about being a good citizen. Being a good citizen means you're respectful of the space and of the people who own that space. And it's really hard to negotiate that because, again, they feel like an adult. So why am I, having to tell my parents or whoever, like everything I'm planning to do? Or, why are they on my case so much? Or, why can't they just, leave me alone? They're treating me like a child. And I say, no, they're not treating you like a child. They're treating you like someone who's cohabitating their space. And once again, be mindful of boundaries, be respectful, and try to negotiate what is a reasonable level of accountability and, an expectation.
Do the adult children, do they maybe inadvertently revert to when they were actually children and behave in childish ways?
Well, there's two things. One is directly with the parent, they can in many ways, but even more so, it's when they're siblings. That's when they're really reverting. So the sibling rivalry really can come back, especially if one of them had left. And so, and there was a younger one who was at home, and whether one or two or more, but, they were kind of used to either being the primary focus or having more space or something. And now this other person comes back, and why did you come back? And the dynamics shift. And so you really do see sibling rivalry, whether the people are in their 20s or 30s, they're acting like they're in their, teens or earlier. So you do see that a lot. But yes, they also do that sometimes in relation to the parents. And that's just, it's a normal phenomenon that, again, the key word for today is going to be negotiating. It's being able to negotiate, each person's needs and expectations.
That brings to mind a situation, actually the situation which sparked this conversation. So I have a friend, two of her 20-something children are moving back. One of them has a good entry-level job that obviously doesn't pay her enough to rent in Toronto, so she's moving back home. The other one is adrift and relying on his parents for support and everything. So how would a situation like that play out where you have these two very different scenarios?
Well, yeah, that's very tricky because, the parents want to be there for each child, but it's not like that. It's acting in a vacuum. Whatever they do with one, the other person sees it. And that goes back to what I was saying before about that sibling rivalry. It's, mom or dad, they always liked you, or they cut you the slack, or, you got it easy or something like that. And they're seeing it play out. But again, they're adults, so there should be more expectations. And as you say, if somebody has a job, if they're kind of sort of starting to launch, they understand that you have to, be mindful and respectful and do your part. And then they see the other sibling who's maybe, kind of, as you say, adrift. They don't quite get it. And it really it fuels a lot of resentment. And there's two types of people in that situation. Some say, you know what, hey, if my good-for-nothing sibling is doing nothing, why should I be breaking my breaking my back to to help my parents out? And they start acting like good-for-nothings. Or the other one who says, well, if they're going to act this way, I don't want to place an even greater burden on my parents. So they double down and they're really, really helping out. And in either case, there's a lot of resentment that's being fomented within that relationship or within the dynamics among all the different people.
So how do you resolve it?
You have to have that difficult discussion. It's not my house, my rules. That worked maybe when they were kids or teenagers, but as adults, that really doesn't fly. So it's just basically saying what I said, using the same language, which is, look, we're all sharing this space. It's not about power tripping. It's simply about being a good citizen within a shared space and then laying out the expectations. And that's really important. And that expectation might be, hey, you know what? Contribute $100 a month to, for hydro or food or something like that, just so there's this sense that you're not freeloading. It's coming at it from not in an authoritarian position, but an authoritative, meaning I'm paying the bills here. This is my home. You are lodging with me. I had a responsibility until you were about 18. Now, you're here at my pleasure. Again, not sounding so arrogant as they're saying it, but just laying out the fact for them and saying, we want to have a good relationship. It's tricky. And being respectful and mindful of the young adult's position, saying, I know that you are an adult. Again, you don't want to come down like I'm the parent dictating to you, but you are saying, here's my boundaries, here's my needs, my expectations, and, I expect you to respect them just as I will yours.
What about if one child can contribute, but the other one can't because they don't have a job, don't have anything going?
I always tell both the parent and the adult child, you have to find a way to compensate. So if you can't pay, then you do extra work around the house. If your sibling's paying $100 or $500 or whatever, and you're not, then you should be expected to do more chores. So earn your keep, whether it's financially or through labor.
What about on the parent's side if they find, maybe they've even gone to the point of repurposing the child's room? Do they ever just really resent their children coming back or revert back to where they can hold on tightly?
I've seen all types of dynamics, and I always tell people you have to be so honest with how you are feeling about all of this. And it's not wrong if you say, look, I love my child. I want nothing but the best for them. But they come in, they make noise at certain hours, they disrupt my schedule, they have, they make requests that are, again, a burden and so on. And so being honest about that is far better, because if you're not fully aware of how you're feeling about it, that those feelings will come out. Even if you're not aware of them, they'll come out passive-aggressively, hostilely. They come out in ways that you wouldn't want. And if you're not even aware of it, then you're not even knowing why you're acting a certain way. So, yeah, it's so important for parents to recognize how they're truly feeling about having their child back. And it's not an A or B proposition. It can be a little bit of both. I'm really happy to see them here, but sometimes I need my space. And another key word today is boundaries. Boundaries are not barriers. Boundaries are simply telling the other person, here's what I need, here's what I want, here's what I expect, and what I want to hear the same from you. So let's have those respectful boundaries.
Anything else you want to leave us with?
I tell parents, I say that's the one thing you can't, do not begrudge your child if they are a bit delayed in finding their own way, in their own residence. You have to be prepared that in today's economic reality, you will be, you may have to kind of support them a little bit more than you would have wanted, definitely more than probably you had to yourself. And as I said, as long as the person's not acting entitled, as long as they're trying to earn their keep, don't begrudge them for the sad reality. It's not their fault.
Okay. Dr. Oren Amate, fascinating conversation.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. I always enjoy speaking with you, Libby.
Okay, great. That was psychologist Dr. Oren Amate talking about how to handle the phenomenon of boomerang children. And that brings us to the end of this week's edition of the Zoomer Week in Review. I'm Libby Znaimer. Thanks for joining me today. Be sure to come back next week to stay up to date with all things Zoomer worldwide.
Zoomer Week in Review is produced by Zeev Hadi and Christine Ross, with technical production by Ian Robertson. Executive Producer Moses Neimer. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.